The Tom Woods Show, episode 2181.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I am running into a lot of progressives saying, look, police, fire, schools, these are all great examples of socialism. Well, let's focus on that school example. I've got a free ebook called Education Without the State that makes a pretty darn good case for a stateless approach to education. Pick it up at nostateeducation.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. I just wanted to check in with our old friend Matt Kibbe. You may know him from Freedom Works back in the day. He has his own organization now, Free the People. He interviewed me last year at Porkfest, and I've had him on the show a couple of times. Currently, as he's broadcasting today, he is in the country of Georgia, and I just wanted to catch up with him and pick his brain about what's going on in the world. So, Matt, welcome back.
Hey, Tom, it's good to be with you again.
I'm sorry I wasn't able to see you at Porkfest this year, but you seem to be quite a traveler. Where are you broadcasting from today?
I just arrived technically this morning in Tbilisi, Georgia, and my wife Terry and I are speaking at a conference here, Liberty International, great libertarian organization. It's been around a long time. And we really love the country of Georgia. There's a real hardcore free market tradition that goes back to the fall of the Soviet Union. And there's, believe it or not, there's Austrian economic centers and people teach Mises and Hayek, and it's really a fun place, particularly when you get a chance to talk to students, because you just get big, big groups of people, sometimes upwards of 1,000 students wanting to know about this liberty thing.
That really is great. Well, now I'm realizing you must be horribly jet lagged, and yet for some reason you've chosen to appear on this show with me right now. So I appreciate that.
Well, you never know what kind of crazy things might come out of my mouth, but we'll see what happens.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I wonder if we might start with, I wouldn't say this is the reason I'm having you on, but it was something running through my mind that gave me the idea. I guess I had you on the show fairly early, like probably back in 2014. And then yeah. I didn't have you on again until very recently during COVID because of an interesting paper you had written. And then I saw you at Porkfest and you interviewed me and all that. Now, I wonder, would you say that there is anything about Matt Kibbe over those, just that brief number of years, fewer than nine, that has changed in terms of tone, outlook, emphasis, anything, would you say?
Yeah, well, a different focus in my career and perhaps an evolving attitude about the wickedness of the state. Because when I was first on your show, I was a Tea Party guy and I was running a Tea Party organization. And my goal back, and I'm still proud of some of the things we did, but you know, my goal was to sort of repopulate the House and the Senate with guys like Thomas Massey and Rand Paul. And I still think it was a noble effort, but I've now decided that politics is a potentially fruitless thing to do. I respect people that do it, but I really think that politics is downstream of culture, as Andrew Breitbart once so famously said. And we're really focused on culture now, but I'm also not the leader of a grassroots movement. I'm myself. So I get to be my full-blown libertarian self. When I was the head of the Tea Party, I didn't talk about all of my own personal views because I was representing a community whenever I went on TV. So that was different. But I also happen to think, and I think we talked about this a little bit last time, I focus a lot on language and translating these libertarian values and the ideas of Mises and Hayek into language that I think can connect with people who are never going to read the books and they probably don't even know what the L word is. But to me, the optimistic half story is that we could really turn on a lot of young people that would never have had access to these ideas back in the days of libraries and books and all of those ancient tools we used to use.
Now, I completely understand where you're coming from. I'm curious about what you think went wrong with the Tea Party movement. Now, not that it's political per se, because some political movements are successful, but something went wrong with it. Now, it seems that one of the things that went wrong was that I think there were some I wouldn't say everybody in the Tea Party movement was completely ideologically aligned with me, obviously. But there were some signs that these were people who were willing to break free of the barriers imposed by Mitt Romney and John McCain and the usual suspects. They were willing to think differently, and I thought that was a good thing. But then you saw some people in the DC orbit wanting to, in effect, I think, grab hold of, make money from, and then tame the Tea Party movement and channel it back into safe avenues within the Republican Party. Is that ultimately what you think happened to it? Or what do you think, why do we not have the Tea Party movement right now?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It was hijacked by the Republican establishment, the political machine in Washington, D.C. And, you know, the origins, as you know well, I think a lot of the Tea Party energy really started with the Ron Paul Revolution. And those early heady days, you had a lot of people that were waving signs that said things like, who is John Galt? So there were some intellectual roots to that movement. And the values, I think, were quite solid. But once we got involved in politics, and I understand why we did, and I was part of that, I think we lost control of it. And choosing specific candidates that stood up to our values, and I mentioned two of them, Rand and Thomas Massey. Mike Lee was another early adopter of the Tea Party ethos. But at some point, a lot of Tea Party activists just started saying, Republicans have to take the House, Republicans have to take the Senate, Republicans have to take the presidency. And then you end up with Mitt Romney as your candidate, and you've lost any moral, philosophical credibility. So I think ultimately, when it shifted from being sort of a social movement based on a set of very common sense values to a political movement that wanted to replace the Democrats with Republicans, it lost its way and ultimately just died. I mean, all social movements, I suppose, die, but I think politics was our Achilles heel.
I want to ask you now the question that's been on my mind over the past couple of years, and whose answer I'm sure is very obvious to most listeners, and my answer has been evolving. But I think it's kind of the question for this day and age in which we live. Are we dealing with stupidity or wickedness?
Both. And I think they kind of go together. And when we talk about low information voters, I'd rather generally say that we're talking about a lot of people that have more important things to do, like raise their...
Oh, I agree. On the voter front, I'm willing to be more indulgent, even though they should know better because the answers are just a click away. But I mean like the people running the show.
The people in charge, yeah. I leaned more towards the evil power-mongering narrative. And I think the last 2.5 years have absolutely reaffirmed that belief. It's really radicalized me because if it was just about educating people on basic economics, our job would be done now. But the more we reach people and the more people realize how insanely stupid things like last week's Inflation Reduction Act actually are in practice, this is just a power grab. And it's an orchestrated power grab amongst insiders that are trying to protect themselves and they're trying to enrich themselves. But I think they're also afraid, and this is sort of the upside of this narrative, they're afraid that the rest of us are figuring it out. So you have this good guys versus bad guys. You have technology that democratizes knowledge and allows more and more people to know what's actually going on. And those same tools are available to our would-be overlords, and they use it against us. So this is kind of a monumental clash between those two things. But I think they know exactly what they're doing, and they view us, their subjects, as at best lab rats to be manipulated, at worst expendable. And that was the, you know, the entire logic of every form of collectivism, particularly Marxism, really didn't view people as people at all. They were just pieces of a puzzle or cogs in a wheel, very expendable. When Mao talked about killing millions of people, he very much viewed it as a necessary part of the process because they always thought about the collective and not the individual. And I think you could make that same accusation against a lot of the people that embraced lockdowns. It wasn't just well-meaning bad policy. It was that they didn't care about the people that were left in the wake of these disastrous ideas.
And yet you look at a place like New Zealand and they just happily and overwhelmingly reelected the woman who did this to them. And I love to travel. And if I traveled only to places that agreed with me politically, I would be in a very, very small amount of square footage, let's say. But I, at this point, kind of feel like Australia and New Zealand are just so psychologically broken at this point that I'm not sure I could bear to visit them, honestly. I think it would be too depressing, and it would be surreal and weird to interact with people there. I know that sounds odd, but I just don't think I could do it.
You know, I actually feel the same way about Canada, of all places. Like, you know, Canadians are so nice, and yet here we are. You know what's interesting about all of these countries, and particularly New Zealand and Australia, it wasn't that long ago that the leadership would have been characterized as liberal in the classical sense, limited government, constitutional freedom type stuff. Particularly New Zealand was a hotbed for reforms maybe two decades ago. I think they got Artel. The bad guys figured out what they can do to manipulate us and to hurt us. And it's our fear. And we talked about this last time. You know, if people are afraid enough, they'll give up everything. But I think, you know, New Zealand, as you know, is now suffering from the inevitable consequences of the economic lockdowns and the isolation and the excess deaths caused by other things other than COVID. And now they're getting crushed with COVID infections. I think there is accountability that's happening. Maybe New Zealand is a lagging indicator, but you see, you know, the truckers in Canada, the farmers in the Netherlands. Everywhere I look, I see grassroots people saying, what did you guys just do to us? And yes, they should have had the instinct to say, hell no. They should have had that libertarian instinct that you and I had almost from day one, where we said, this is crazy. This is horrible economics, and it also just violates the basic principles of human decency. But people were afraid and they gave up everything. But now chickens are coming home to roost. And I'm optimistic. I have to be optimistic that people will figure it out and impose some sort of accountability amongst these decision makers.
I do want to say a word, though, to people listening to this who live in those countries. I love you people, and I want to do anything I can to support you. And I did my best with the Canadian trucker thing. I thought that was heroic. So I know, at least if I go to Canada, I know there could be, if not a silent majority, then a, you know, an unnecessarily silent minority there that did see through it. You know, it's just a place like Australia, though, but especially New Zealand, they just keep on voting for it. It's just too demoralizing. I just can't, you know, whereas on the other hand, a few months ago, I got to spend a week in Stockholm. Now, Stockholm is not a place that, you know, where I see my politics reflected, or Sweden at large. But my goodness, it really is just as they say. It is as if nothing ever happened. The only people we saw wearing masks, with extremely rare exceptions, were fellow American tourists. And that was it. Now, the one thing that indicated that something had happened was that they still have the stay 2 meters apart signs up and everybody's ignoring them. And this and that. But otherwise, it's like nothing happened. And I just wonder what, in the U.S., when I see people continuing on as if this is March 2020, I just want to ask, like, what do you think? Because I'm pretty sure this is the same for Denmark and Norway. These people are just living without masks, and they're living without these precautions, and they're none the worse for it. So how do you account for this? Like, why do you think they're wrong when they have lived experience behind them to prove it? It's crazy. And so it's weird that the places I want to go as compared to where I used to want to go. I've been wanting to go to Sweden almost through this whole time. October 2021, we were all set to go. And shortly before that, they suddenly decided, oh, Americans can't come in. Americans, Israelis, and a few others. I thought, what? Are you kidding me? So we had to push it off to May 2022. But it was so worth the wait. I would so love to go back there. It's such a fun city to explore. Honestly, I'm happy that later this month, do you know Andrew Heaton by any chance?
Oh, yes. Yes, very well.
Okay. So he got his master's degree at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. And he says that of all the things he's done in his life, the thing he is the best at by far is tour guide. And he says it's a wonderful city. Well, that was another trip that got ruined by this. And so we're going to be there at the end of August. And he's going to take us around. And so it'll be talk about a place that was horribly locked down. But in that case, we're going to be with Andrew Heaton visiting a beautiful, great city. And yes, I completely contradict myself in my philosophy of where I'll visit. Okay, it has come out. I completely contradict myself. I just go where I want, basically. And it's going to be great to be able to sort of see a beautiful city almost as if there hadn't been a Fauci, because, you know, it's all open again. But yet you still, I guess what bothers me is that some people will say, what difference does it make if somebody else wears a mask? That doesn't affect you in any way. They have this feeling that they need it and just leave them alone. Okay, well, my instinct always is just to leave people alone. But it's just that every time I see that image, I'm reminded of what was done to society. I'm reminded of what was done to the world. And I feel like I personally would never, ever want to broadcast to the world even the remotest hint that I endorsed any of that. And so to see that in my face constantly, it's jarring and demoralizing. I guess that's why I feel the way I do.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And, you know, I am very much a live and let live guy, and I don't mind pretty much what anyone else chooses to do with their lives as long as they don't hurt me or take my stuff. But the mask thing is really, at this point, kind of, I mean, yes, some people are just scared to death, and that irrational fear, there's nothing you can do about it. But it's also, every time I see someone wearing a mask now, I sort of think to myself, you know what? That son of a bitch would love to get the government to force me to do that again.
Yeah.
And that's what, like, going to some of these countries now, it's not comfortable because you're always on edge. Am I going to be judged? Am I going to be verbally assaulted? Are they going to leave me alone? Are they going to hassle me and force me to do things? And will they change the rules tomorrow so that I end up in some sort of COVID camp? So, like, it sort of takes all the fun out of traveling to certain places. And it'll be a long time before I go back to Australia, New Zealand. They're going to have to convince me that they would respect my basic rights as a visitor.
Yeah, yeah. What's your opinion of Alex Jones and what's happening to him?
It's funny you bring him up, because I never paid much attention to Alex Jones until the experts told me that I wasn't allowed to.
That's funny the way that works.
Yeah, and I just listened, I think it was a week or two ago, Michael Malice had him on his show. You know, I don't know all the history of what he did that led to the lawsuit and all that stuff. But my reaction today is, doesn't the First Amendment apply even when you say stupid, odious things as a public figure? And I'm not a lawyer, and I asked Twitter to help explain to me what had happened in this civil case. But I think, and we were warned of this years ago, and nobody really wanted to defend the guys that are super edgy and maybe even crazy, because we're like, well, we want to be serious thinkers and we want to be treated seriously by the media and everything else. But it now looks like, you know, they started with Alex Jones, but I think you can tie it directly to exactly the type of censorship we all suffer on social media. And even I do, and I go out of my way to explain things and express opinions in ways that I'm really trying to reach people outside of my little libertarian tribe. So I'm not the first person that's going to get shadow banned, but, you know, they've taken my videos down. And famously, I had Ron Paul on my show pretty early on during the pandemic, and I asked him about masks. And he, of course, was right early, before the rest of us knew what to think about it. And of course, YouTube took it down. So I think we should be aware of the fact that the machine is wanting to censor all of our speech, anything that conflicts the official narrative. And Alex Jones isn't sounding so crazy to me on some of these things as he was when I first started listening to him.
I feel like it really is true that he's the canary in the coal mine. And I think slippery slope arguments used to be dismissed because, well, they're slippery slope arguments. And it was enough to identify them as a slippery slope argument to dismiss them. But boy, in real life, that slope sure is darn slippery. You know, so it does seem like what happens to Alex Jones eventually happens to you is a pretty good rule of thumb. And so what's happening to him legally, especially, I think it was the AP the other day, maybe you saw this, they tweeted out something saying Alex Jones is being ordered to pay, you know, a huge $45 million settlement for things that he said. However, people who speak badly about vaccines, and then I forget one other thing, I forget what it was, get to continue along their way without any legal harassment. With this strong implication, of course, being you shouldn't be able to do that either. Alex Jones shouldn't do what he's doing, but you also shouldn't be able to do things you might want to do.
Yeah.
So they're not being particularly subtle about it, that yes, you're coming next. Then, I mean, look, I don't know about the FBI. I didn't even have time to read about the FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago. But these are not particularly subtle hints. And if you're going to say to people, but look, I'm not a Trump supporter, or I'm, you know, I'm a third thing. You think these people are the type to make careful distinctions like that?
No, not at all. I'm thinking another comedian friend of mine, Lou Perez, did this great video a couple years ago. It was a comedy skit called Stop Making Me Defend Trump. And when I you and I really don't have any information on why the FBI did what it did, but it looks awful. It looks banana republic for a sitting president to go after a guy that may well run against him in his reelection, and I think unprecedented. So it's hard not to look at all this stuff as a very much concerted effort by the machine. I don't know if we call them the empire or the regime or the machine. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's just the people in power. But it seems like the way they want to control our speech, the way they want to control our movement, the way they want to control every aspect of our lives is a defensive move as we, in many ways, become freer and more independent. Like, this is the double-edged sword of technology. Your show and all the work that I do and thousands of other people are really turned on to the ideas of liberty in ways that wasn't possible when I was a kid. And that, to me, is really exciting. I bet you it creates a lot of anxiety in the halls of power. And it's a little bit like whack-a-mole. They see that Twitter becomes a platform where subversive ideas, different ideas, ideas about liberty thrive, and all of a sudden they're clamping down. And then something else comes up, and then they go after that. And then Alex Jones goes off the platform altogether, but his audience sticks with him, and they're still going after him. So I think you could look at this as this is like the deep state gone amok, and we're all going to wake up in the Matrix. Or you could look at it as the last dying gasps of an old power structure that doesn't know what to do with free-thinking people. And I hope it's the latter. I could draw you a horrible scenario where it's the former.
Take a couple of minutes to tell us about your organization, Free the People.
So we started Free the People right after I left FreedomWorks and the Tea Party movement. And the idea specifically was to tap into exactly what I'm talking about, that there's this revolution going on where people, particularly young people, are able to find alternative ideas for themselves. And it used to be social media, but more and more it's streaming services where young people curate the kind of information and stories and documentaries and music, everything based on their own preferences, based on their own curiosity. And we just saw an opportunity to take the ideas and values that we cherish and try to tell some beautiful stories. And that quickly became essentially a video production company. That's what Free the People is. And we produce a lot of documentary content. We go and we tell beautiful stories about what happens when people are free, but we also tell devastating stories about what government has done to people. Everything from Mao's Great Leap Forward to a family in Brooklyn that was devastated by lockdowns. And to me, the thing that I think a lot of libertarians fail to see is that normal people process the world through their emotions. And I think about downward sloping demand curves when I process the world, but that makes me the weirdo. And so we really want to connect with people through their emotions. And I think that's kind of what happened to me when I was a kid, because I was turned on to libertarian ideas listening to a Rush album that was dedicated to Ayn Rand. And of course, the first book I read from her was with Anthem, which is as logical and well-reasoned as it is, it's really an emotional demand to be recognized as a person. And so that's the kind of motivations that we have. And we really try to reach that audience outside of libertarian or constitutional conservative bubbles, just people that are living their lives and enjoy consuming information through popular culture, as opposed to demanding that they all slog through Man Economy and State.
Not there's anything wrong with that, but there are a lot of different approaches, you know, a lot of different approaches to take. In fact, I think it's Gene Epstein who credits reading Man, Economy, and State with putting him on the right path. And I always felt like you had to already be on the right path to actually slog through Man, Economy, and State. It just seemed like odd that Gene had that reversed. But again, whatever works. So the website freethepeople.org, right?
Yep, freethepeople.org. And you can find Free the People or myself on pretty much every social media platform, just stirring it up and trying to connect with people.
Excellent. All right. I'll have some links up on the show notes page. I appreciate your time, especially carving it out when you barely even know what time it is at this point. So I hope you have a great stay over there in Georgia, and hope our paths cross sometime soon.
I will do that. There's a lot of beautiful wine over here, and that's part of my empirical research will involve that for sure.
Sounds great. Thanks again.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, folks, that'll do it. Show notes page, tomwoods.com/2181. Follow Matt Kibbe, and I'll see you all tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.